Next installment of Pro Wrestling Havoc and the Pro Wrestling Havoc podcast. I am Jason Smith, along with my co-host, Tim Stevens. And it's been a minute since we've been able to jump onto a podcast. You know, life kind of gets a little hectic, a little chaotic. So we're a little bit late in the game with our WrestleMania reactions, I guess you could say. We're also a little bit behind on talking about some of these releases that WWE went through. And then we've got to catch up on our tournament that we started, the best wrestler that never won a world title. And so we'll start with that. And Tim, we'll get right into yours. The last time up, you had Scott Hall taking down Jim Duggan. You've got some interesting names left. You have Roddy Piper, Butch Reed, Kurt Hennig, and Don Morocco.
Well, first I want to say one thing that really has nothing to do with the tournament. Leave Jerry Lawler alone. That's all I'm going to say. Anyways, back to where we were.
Wait, what happened with Jerry Lawler? I missed something.
Apparently he had said something on the broadcast. I don't know the full story, but he had said something and a bunch of people took offense to it. And
oh, so it's basically a Jim Cornette thing where he said something in jest and then...
Pretty much, yeah. So, yeah. So I guess Jerry's come under fire for that, and it's not really all that big of a deal. So, anyways, yeah. Back to where we were. I got, you said I have Butch Reed and Don Morocco and Piper and...
Kurt Hennig,
oh, wow. I think we'll go... Hennig versus Butch Reed.
Okay.
I mean, there's really... I'm not going to put too much into this match. Of course, this is tough to seed people, so the seedings, I don't really think particularly matter, but I think hands down, Hennig wins it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of those guys, I think... Between you and I, there's three or four guys that no question. I mean, all the guys had the credentials to be champions. But I think Hennig's one of those guys that definitely should have been world champion. So, I like Butch Reed and of course, I loved him in Doom, but he just, his WWF run wasn't spectacular, but that happens with a lot of guys. So I'm going with Hennig to win.
All right. And I have my 3-6 matchup, Roddy Piper and Davey Boy Smith. And Roddy is one of those dudes that you and I both have on our list. Really one of the first names that comes up when you talk about guys who never won a world title anywhere. And Roddy was one of those dudes who didn't really need a title. And you know, he could talk, he could work, and he didn't need to be a champion to legitimize what he was able to do. And Davey was not necessarily the same way, but Davey was the same way in that his work didn't really, he didn't need to be legitimized with a title, if that makes sense. And, you know, he's a lot like a Shawn Michaels in the later portion of his career. He's a lot like a Dolph Ziggler, where he can work anywhere on the card. You can put him anywhere on the card and you're going to be like, yeah, okay, I can see him being a main eventer. I can see him setting the tone for the show as an opener. I can see him in the middle of the card somewhere. And he was awesome. I think this would be a great match. I don't know if the chemistry would work out too well, just given Davey's style and Roddy's style. I don't know if they would really work well together, but I think I would put Roddy over on in this one over Davey Boy.
Dang.
I know, right?
Well, I think, and I was actually thinking about this earlier and where I was going to put Roddy, you know, when I get to him. But he's one of those guys, and you're right, he didn't need a title to be legitimized, but at the same time, he was like, he probably, if you think about, you know, what you and I are trying to do here, and in the grand scheme of things, he's probably the one guy that was like a major, major player in the wrestling business and didn't. I'm not taking anything away from these guys, and I'm not saying they weren't major players, but, you know, he was like the main event guy, you know what I mean? And, yeah. And I think of everybody on the list, I think he's the one guy, definitely, you're like, wow, you know? And I think if you're just like a novice wrestling fan, I mean, you know who Roddy Piper is. He's one of those, you know, what I want to call like a top 10 household names. And he's one, if you're just a novice wrestling fan and you didn't know that Roddy Piper was never a world champion, I think that you'd be, you know, it would shock somebody.
Yeah. You would have been surprised to know that he wasn't a world champion anywhere. And that's the weirdest thing about it, but he had that crossover appeal a lot like Hogan did. And that, you know, that was huge for him and it worked out pretty well. So that kind of covers that portion of it. We'll move on quickly to the fallout from WrestleMania. I thought WrestleMania was okay, bordering on good. And for me, the two quote unquote main event matches, your world championship matches, I was not a fan of either one of them. I loved Edge and Randy Orton, and I loved the two cinematic matches, the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse match. I thought they were very well produced, very well done, and that is where the industry should have gone when they had the Matt Hardy feud in Impact, when they did the Hardy Compound match. They kind of set that bar for those cinematic storytelling matches. And then WWE took that bar and raised it to the nth degree. And I know when we were watching it in real time, you weren't really a fan of the Firefly Funhouse match, but now that you've had some time to sort of digest those matches, I kind of want to get your thoughts on WrestleMania as a whole and then sort of your favorite matches.
The Firefly Funhouse match wasn't, I'm not going to say that I disliked it, but it wasn't really a match. If you get what I'm saying,
no, it was a promo.
And it was more or less a promo and like, I get it. But at the same time, they could have saved 20 minutes just went in and gotten the match over with and been done with it.
Yeah.
I think, one thing that had to be done there, which they did, was and it was funny because during the broadcast of it, I texted you and I'm like, oh my god, they're gonna screw Braun over again. I think that kind of made the night the weekend is finally putting the belt on him and mm-hmm. he deserves it.
Oh yeah,
I mean he's had a couple issues, but he deserves it. I think if they would have kept it on Goldberg, they'd have pissed a lot of people off.
Oh, for sure.
But, you know, for what they had, it wasn't a bad night or a bad weekend. I think I think I like Edge and Christian the most. They put on a hell of a show.
Mm-hmm.
The Boneyard match was awesome.
Yeah.
With that being said, unless they do something else like that in the future, and it's nothing against him because I'm a huge Undertaker fan, but I think it's time to ride off into the sunset with that match under his belt.
Yeah.
AJ made him look good. And I think that's a hell of a way for him to go out if he chooses to do so.
At his age, how do you top that?
Well, exactly. I don't think you can.
No.
Unless the only other thing I could think of, you know, if they do something similar, finally, between him and Sting, something like that, they might be able to pull that match off.
Right.
But no, I'm with you kind of overall. I don't think that, and I've never been a huge fan of Brock. Brock's a beast and I get the persona and I get, you know, his gimmick, but his 5, 10, 15 minute matches bore me.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think that, you know, and good for Drew too, you know, Drew, but I, that being said, and don't get me wrong, I like Drew, and Drew's earned everything he's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw something the other day, and it might have just been a meme or somebody saying something on Facebook, and I thought it was a wonderful point that, you know, Heath Slater is the only member of 3MB that hasn't been world champion.
Yeah, that was me. I said Heath Slater for WWE champion 2025. I'm calling it right now.
I mean, he has held the tag titles a couple times, yep. But the thing of it is like, and again, not to take anything away from him, or really not to take anything away from Jinder, but Jinder became champion to serve a purpose for Vince.
Yep.
And I think when it came to Drew, you know, Drew coming back and he left, you know, he left TNA and he came back to the WWE and, you know, he's kind of worked his way up. I think that was kind of like, and again, I don't want to come off like Drew didn't deserve it, because he does, you know, and he's worked hard to get where he's gotten. But I think that it was more or less of Vince McMahon wanting to say, well, you know what? I told you so. I told you that he's the chosen one. And I told you that he's going to be champion someday.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honest with you, I like Heath. I think Heath's a good worker, and I think he's just gotten some shit gimmicks. So,
yeah. So with,
but,
yeah.
No. But anyway, overall, for what they had to work with and what they had to do, I thought Mania was not too bad.
Yeah.
I was skeptical of it without the fans, but I thought that with what they had to work with, they did well. There was a couple matches there that I thought were a waste, and I could have just done without them, but...
Yeah. I mean, you get that with every WrestleMania, though.
Exactly.
It is what it is, you know, and I want to pose this question to you, because I just thought of it while we were talking, and how I was disappointed in the main events. I was happy for the wins, but I was disappointed in how they sort of played out, because they didn't really tell much of a story. So The question I want to pose to you is, can you get away with main event matches like that in front of a crowd?
I think that it depends on who the players are and who gets over.
Well, I think, yeah.
I mean, the problem is with Strowman and Goldberg, you really couldn't expect much more.
No, you couldn't.
I mean, Goldberg, he's had, 5-6 matches since his return, and he's been in the ring maybe a half an hour.
If that.
So, you know, I think for what, you know, what, and I'm not going to dog him. It's Bill Goldberg, but he's right. Not what he used to be. And of course, he was never really that great of a wrestler anyways. You know, he's going to come in and hit you with five or six spears, and he's either going to win or he's not. And that's what you expect out of him.
Yeah.
So I don't think with a crowd there that the crowd would have been expected much, as long as it had the outcome that it did.
Yeah. I think with Drew and Brock is probably the one that I had the bigger problem with, because you spent all of this time building this match up to where you had Drew would have flashes of brilliance, like, oh, maybe he could beat Brock. And then Brock would come back and just obliterate him. And then you're like, oh, okay, maybe Brock's gonna, you know, finally try. You know what I mean? And then They get in the ring, and you know, it's post Boneyard match, and everything, you know, everybody's off of this huge high from the Boneyard match, and you get what, 7 minutes, if that?
Right. Well, and my next thing, you know, I forgot where I was going with this. Go ahead if you got another thought.
Was my only thought. I mean, it was. I don't think you could get away with that in front of a crowd. I think, you know, yeah, they would have been happy that Drew got over, and it would have been a huge pop. But I mean, it's 6:55. Oh wait, that was the Big Show match. 4:35 was Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar.
Right.
4.5 minutes for a main event. Come on.
No, I agree. And especially if you got, you know, if you don't have the WWE network and you're paying $60 to see it. But no, my thought was is that Maybe they put, I mean, really, when you think about it, Brock put Drew over to Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And then, you know, there was a couple of brawls that they had that Brock put him over. Like, Brock could put him over through the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, for and sure.
And it was like, and I don't know, you know, if they kept, if they, you know, like you said, you know, Brock's just obliterating him. If they wanted to make you think, well, you know, Brock put him over here and here, so, you know, Brock's going to win the night, or what direction they were going in. But I think that, again, like I said, it's the players more or less than anything. And Brock has become one of those guys that you can't expect a lot from him anymore. And I don't think I'm not going to say that Brock Lesnar can't go, but it's a lot like you said, you know, and I agree with you about Hogan. When he was in Japan, Hogan was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he come over here, and you know, when Hulkamania broke out and all that, he had what, 5-6 moves?
Yeah. I mean, he was John Cena in 1985. He was 6 moves of doom. And he was always going over.
Right. And, you know, I think that you know, what's Lesnar? Suplex F5.
Yeah, pretty much. You maybe know? A little ground and pound action, maybe a submission attempt. But, yeah, I mean, 98% of his matches are it's Suplex City and F5s.
And I just don't think that they are building him up to be anything more than that. They're just a beast that goes in there and runs through people.
Yeah. Oh, and why would you? I mean, that's what draws. Is he shows up, he beats ass, and then he leaves.
And I don't think, and we've had this conversation, you know, outside of the podcast, and you asked me that, and I don't know if he's putting his 100%, you know, his self into it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, I think sometimes you just got to sit there and wonder what Brock Lesnar is going to show up.
Yeah.
So I think to answer your question, I wasn't impressed by either match, but I think with the outcome of them, they'd have gone, you know what I mean? They'd have gone over, but
yeah,
I guess, too, you know, not everybody looks at wrestling the way you do or the way I do, or, you know, we might not look at it the same way as something else. So, you know, mm-hmm. It's a real subjective, but it's all, like I said, it's all in the players, and it's all in who, you know, who goes over.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Because if Goldberg would have went over, I probably would have thrown my couch.
Yeah, me too.
So, but, and that's, I think you raised a good point, though, because without a crowd, I mean, I don't think that the outcomes would have been any different if you would have had a crowd.
No.
But without a crowd, you know, people are, well, you know, I don't know if I want to watch this and blah, 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 blah. And then you almost had to. And I've always made the joke that, and a lot of people have, that Vince really doesn't care what the people want or think. But I think with the state that it's in right now, without any fans, with the pandemic and everything, he had to give the fans what he wanted.
Oh yeah.
Or what they wanted, you know?
For sure.
And it was just, I mean, you've got guys that can only do so much, or that are only, you know, paid to do so much. And you really, I don't know if you can expect anything else out of them. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I, you know, it's pretty much like you said, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you can't really expect much out of Goldberg, so you're going to get 2.5 minutes from him. That's fine. But I think in that instance, getting Brock and Drew, you needed to go more than 4.5, 5 minutes. I mean, you have to, just for the sake of telling the story. But I mean, if you were going to have a situation where you had your two high profile championship matches, go this route on the same show, you have to do it in an empty arena. You cannot do that in front of a crowd. I think if there was a crowd, 4.5 minutes for Brock and Drew, they're gonna be happy for Drew, but they're gonna be pissed that they only got 4.5 minutes. We know Brock can go 10, 12. I mean, even 10 minutes would have been great. Like, I think I messaged you right after Drew went over on Brock, and I was like, wait, that's it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We're done? Really? And it was just, it was a weird letdown to an otherwise pretty decent WrestleMania.
No, I agree. But I think a lot of times too, you never know what you're gonna get.
Yeah, and yeah. Really, I mean, Drew deserved better.
I agree. No, I agree 100%. And I hope that for his sake, the next pay per view that they have that the arena's filled, I hope he gets his due still.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that there was, with that being said, I think there was some matches that just went too long too.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at the match times. I mean, you had the Women's Tag Team Championship match went 15 minutes. You had Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler went 8.5, which is way too short for a match like that. The triple threat singles match for the tag team championships, 18.5 minutes.
Yeah, that took forever.
You probably could have tweaked that a little bit. It was slow in spots. Kevin and Seth was great at 17 minutes. The Boneyard match was 19 flat. I mean, you had Firefly Funhouse at 13. The five-way elimination match for the SmackDown Women's Championship was 19:20. Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley went 20.5 minutes. Second on the card. And then in the middle of that WrestleMania day two, you had Edge and Randy Orton 36.5 minutes.
Jeez.
Two of the oldest guys on the card went 36.5 minutes. And I get it. It was taped and all of that, but still.
Right. No, I agree. And actually, there's something there that you brought up that I want to touch on, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I know we got a couple other things, and we're trying to kind of get done with it tonight. But, and I know you're a big fan of NXT, and they're trying to legitimize some things there. But this match for Charlotte Flair,
it was sloppy.
It was. But the point I'm getting at, though, is it didn't really make a difference. Like, it didn't really make a difference for her. Win or lose, I guess.
Right.
It might have if she lost, but my point is this. Okay, so she's what? 6-time champion? Women's champion?
This is number 10.
Number 10. Okay. Yeah. So the point I'm making is you put somebody who's been the champion 9 times, okay, and you take her and you put the NXT championship on her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then she's gotten really nowhere. And then if she would have lost, it really wouldn't have done anything to tarnish her because it was an NXT person and she's just putting the NXT person over. So mm-hmm. I guess I don't really understand the direction that they wanted to go in other than, you know, making Ripley look good.
Which this did not do.
No, it did not. And I don't really understand the direction that they wanted to go in by having Charlotte win the NXT championship.
I completely agree. I think Rhea going over on Charlotte does more for Rhea and the NXT brand than Charlotte coming to NXT to try to legitimize the brand. Really, it's going to be the Charlotte Flair show where she just runs roughshod over a bunch of developmental talent that she really has no business being in the ring with. And, right. You know, I mean, Rhea is, she could come to the main roster and she would be fine. She's that talented. Toni Storm is the same way. There's a lot of girls down there, a lot of women down there, I should say, that are really, really good and would hold their own. But I think the way that you booked it and the way that you slid Charlotte in, you've now essentially buried your entire women's division in NXT, because now you've said none of you are good enough to carry the torch. And I think that's a problem. And it really, they could have done something about it by having Rhea look good in this match, but the match was, they just, it didn't look like they had a lot of chemistry. You know what I mean? Like, it, right. It didn't flow that great. They're really, the story, it's debatable about whether or not that story was there, you know, and it felt slow in spots and it felt kind of dead. Like, what the hell do we do to spice this back up? And then it just wouldn't get over that hump. And it felt like they were pushing a boulder. They'd get two steps from being able to get it to the other side of the hill, and then they would let it roll back to the bottom.
That's a good analogy. I agree. And I just, that of all the matches for me was terrible. There really wasn't a lot of point to it. And then the Firefly Funhouse, there really wasn't a lot of build up to that. I mean, I get what they were trying to do, but
yeah,
it is what it is. So,
yeah. And, you know, I posted a video on my personal Facebook page about the Firefly Funhouse match, and it sort of tied everything together. And John Cena, when he cut that promo on SmackDown and basically said, I'm going to take out the most overhyped, overprivileged talent ever. He was talking about himself, and you didn't know it at the time. But then when everything was said and done, he helped paint the picture of John Cena being the golden goose. I mean, and Bray even said it in the promo. I mean, it wasn't even a match. I mean, the way that Bray and John were able to put the Fiend character over while almost humanizing John Cena, I thought it was really, really well done. And it showed that John did have a weak side to him. He did have a weakness. He was almost fired when he first came up. The Doctor of Thugonomics was basically, you know, dick jokes and gay jokes, which wouldn't fly in this climate right now. And right. The character, you know, that hustle, loyalty, respect character by then was a cash cow. It was a merchandise machine. And so you had to keep him at the top. He had the look. So you basically shot a rocket up his ass and pushed him to the moon and gave him the Hogan treatment. And he's not going to come off of that pedestal. You know what I mean? So you almost felt like, okay, I get it. John's been through some hard shit and he's busted his ass. But when he got to the top, he didn't return the favor. And so I hate him, but damn, did he have to work to get there. And you know, it was the same thing. Like, Bray should have been that same way. You know, like, he's a third-generation wrestler, a second-generation wrestler, whatever it is, and his whole family's full of talent. And, like, not just, like, ho-hum, you know, Carmella's dad talent, like, legends of the business talent. And he never really got that push that I thought his talent should have given him. And so it sort of humanized the both of them, and it shined a bright light on John Cena sort of backstage, and I thought that was really, really well done.
No, I agree. It told the story that it meant to tell, for sure. So.
Absolutely. So that's the WrestleMania sort of recap and our thoughts and feelings on it. I want to get quickly to the announcement WWE made. It happens every year with the post-WrestleMania releases. This year just feels dirty. You know what I mean? It feels dirtier than it did in years past, mostly because of the climate that we're in right now, and jobs are quite literally at a premium, and you know, there's no wrestling happening anywhere, so none of these guys are going to be able to bounce right back. You know what I mean? And so real quick, I just want to go down the list, and then I'll get some feedback from you. Kurt Angle, you know, let's rapid fire these, dude. Kurt Angle for me is no big loss. He's gonna be okay. He wasn't really doing anything in the ring anyway, so for him to go, it sucks and it's sad, but it's an understandable move.
No, I get it. And I mean, Kurt is Kurt's a legend in the business, so if he wants to go to AEW or even NWA or even Ring of Honor for that matter, mm-hmm. he's going to get a job somewhere if he wants it.
Oh, yeah. Drake Maverick, Rockstar Spud on the indies. Drake is a hell of a talent in the ring. It sucks that he never got the opportunity to show that off in WWE over the long term. I mean, late in his run, he started to get into the ring more, but you know, the whole AOP manager thing was kind of stupid. The 205 Live commissioner thing was dumb. I didn't really like the way he was handled in WWE. So for him to go back to the indies, I think is going to be a blessing for him.
I agree.
Gallows and Anderson, they'll be fine. They'll go back to New Japan and be just as over as they were when they left.
Do you think they'll go to AEW?
I don't know.
A working relationship anyways, but I think that AEW has a good, or at least they're trying to build a good tag team division.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Gallows and Anderson would pay huge dividends there, and I think they would shine in AEW. So it'd be interesting to see.
And that's an excellent point. Carl is massively over in Japan. Luke Gallows by himself, I don't know if he does anything in Japan, you know, for anybody as from a fan base. Them together, they're massively over in Japan. Them together, I think, would be great in AEW, like you said. I guess it just depends on that whole Bullet Club relationship, you know, and there's sort of the Fergal Devitt, Finn Balor, Bullet Club group, and then there's the AJ Styles Bullet Club group, which Carl and Gallows were a part of. And then there was the Kenny Omega group, which Anderson and Gallows were kind of in there, but sort of backing out. And, you know, so I guess it just kind of depends on how that dynamic works out as to whether or not they spend a ton of time in AEW. But I think if they showed up on TNT, I wouldn't be surprised. Next up, EC3. With Impact under new management, I think he would be okay there. I don't think he fits there anymore. But I don't know if he works in AEW either. So I think this one would be a good get for NWA.
I actually was going to say the same thing. I agree. But I think he's one of those guys that got to WWE and they just didn't know what to do with him, which is too bad because I think he's an immense talent. And he's got a hell of a look. So,
If he'd have stayed in NXT, he would have been massively over. I think he would have had a lot of good opportunities there, but it sucks. They sent him up to the main roster and Vince stuck him in a corner with a cup. And that was that. Leo Rush, I think, was sort of an inevitable release. He had some heat backstage. He wasn't exactly the greatest to work with. I think he probably fits best either in AEW with some of their cruiserweight guys or, you know, in Impact working with like TJPs of the world and some of those smaller guys where they don't really have like the true cruiserweights. Their guys are smaller, but they're not like the, you know, overly aerial cruiserweight guys.
Right. I'm not a fan, so I don't really care what ends up.
I know. Kurt Hawkins, this one stung a little. He had, you know, he's been back for a couple of years and he had that, you know, that gimmick goofy comedy run where he lost a million matches in a row or whatever the hell it was. Hell of a talent. I don't know where he fits. You know, he's probably too old for AEW, but I don't know if he works in Impact, maybe NWA, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think that he could work in NWA. But I honestly, I think that Zach could probably work in AEW if he wanted to. I think Zach will work in NWA. But I think that those two are going to end up a tag team somewhere, whether they come back to the indies or wherever they go. I think that you're going to see those two working together a lot.
Yeah, Zack Ryder is also on that list, and he and Kurt are pretty tight. Zack Ryder and Cody are actually super, super tight. So Zack Ryder in AEW almost feels like an inevitability. So if Kurt comes with him, I think maybe that would be kind of cool, but you never know. Eric Young is on the list as well. I feel bad for him. I think NWA would be a nice soft landing spot for him. Light schedule, guys he's worked with before. I think it could work.
No, I agree. I've always been an EY fan, but you know, he's old. He's one of those guys. I thought he was phenomenal in TNA. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, one of those guys that came to the WWE and really never amounted to much. I think that he's a guy that NXT really didn't help. You know, I think if he'd have gotten there and they'd have put him on the main roster, I think things might have been a little different. And, you know, you can disagree with me on that if you want, but I don't think that NXT served him well.
I would agree with you, but not for the same reason. I think NXT didn't serve him well because he was put into a position where he was asked to help get over some of the guys' insanity he was paired with. And when that, you know, it worked to a certain degree, but not in the way that they had hoped, or not to the level that they had hoped. They hoped they had a money-making, you know, stable where EY could be the mouthpiece, and then you had all the other pieces that could handle the in-ring work, and it didn't happen. And EY was not the same EY that could carry a stable, and it just sort of died out. And so to see him go sucks, but I think it's a blessing for him because of the fact that anything they tried to do with him in WWE just didn't work. Heath Slater, next up. We kind of touched on this briefly. He'll be back. I have no doubt about that. He's a hell of a worker. You know, the dude does damn near anything you ask him to. I think he'll hit the indies. He'll do his thing. And he'll be great, and he'll get better on the indies, and then he'll come back and he'll do the same thing that Drew did and the same thing that Jinder did. And it'll be, you know, he might not be at the level of a champion, but I think he comes back infinitely better.
I agree.
Aiden English, not really sad about that one. He really wasn't doing anything in the ring these days. He was doing like color on 205 Live or something. So let him go to the indies, let him have his fun, do his thing. He'll be fine. Yeah. Sarah Logan, you know, when she first came from the indies, she was Crazy Mary Dobson. She had a wild person gimmick. She was insane, you know, blah, 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 blah. Really thought she would have, if she would have been booked as Sister Abigail versus that weird, like Viking country girl that ate deer but also like invaded Poland and shit, I don't know what the hell she was, but whatever it was, it wasn't working for her. And you know, if they would have booked her as that weird insane type of character and put her as a Sister Abigail, I think she would have been over like Rover.
No, I agree. She's just, And maybe it was the character, but she's just one of the people that I just really never cared to watch.
Yeah, I agree. Mike Chioda, one of the longest tenured employees in WWE. He's not a wrestler, but he was an in-ring, you know, referee, longtime referee. Sucks to see him go. You know, he'll bounce back. He'll be fine. Rowan was an interesting one. I mean, they weren't doing anything with him, so it's kind of nice to see him go, you know, not to see him get fired, but it's nice to see him move on.
Well, right. No, they were kind of giving him that weird little push. I think their intention was to give him a big push, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be fine. He'll catch on somewhere, and he'll be fine, whether it's the indies or I actually think he'd be phenomenal over in Japan too.
I agree.
But I think Rowan is he'll catch on somewhere and he'll be fine. He might even be a guy that ends up coming back too.
For sure.
If he ends up in AEW and they try the him and Brody Lee experiment again over there, I think it'll go off a lot better than it did in WWE. Yeah.
Primo and Epico, I'm going to be honest, I didn't even know they were still with the company.
I didn't know.
The last time I think they even got anything close to a push was what, 2015?
Something like that.
I mean,
yeah.
It's, I, you know, I mean, I'm glad they're going to be able to move on now, but I don't know what WWE had done with them in years.
Right. No, I actually, when I read that, I said, I didn't even know these guys were still around.
I didn't either. Honestly. They feel like a nice shiny toy that is really cool to play with, but Vince has all these other even cooler toys to play with that they just kind of sit in the, they're Super Mario Brothers 2. You know, their family was really, really good. They were pretty good. And then something else came along and it was like, yeah, it's okay, but this is awesome. And that's kind of where they ended up. Mike and Maria Kanellis. I've been going back and watching 2008 WWE. I've been going through all the old Monday Night Raws. Maria Kanellis in her original WWE run was one of the most talented women talent that they had at that time. And that's not saying much because the women's division in 2008 was hot garbage, but she was so good. And I feel like, you know, when they first came in, the gimmick was stupid. Then Mike had his addiction troubles. And I think if Mike had been able to stay clean and they had a good gimmick, I really think Mike could have been maybe an Intercontinental champion. You know, maybe he gets a tag run or something, but those two could have been so good if they had been packaged the right way.
It's the same old story there.
So. Yeah. No Way Jose, you know, I mean, he was a dead man walking the minute he walked out with that No Way Jose gimmick.
Yep.
It's Adam Rose 2.0.
Nothing else you can say there. I agree. So,
which sucks because Levis is a great talent. It's a bummer.
Well, I think he's a guy that's got AEW written all over him too, and he'll go there, and I think he'll get a little bit of a gimmick change, and he'll be all right. Yeah. I think because he is a hell of a talent.
Yeah. Three NXT guys. I skipped over one, but we'll get back to it. Three NXT guys: Alexander Jaksic, Deonna Purrazzo. And it was official. You had sent it to me a couple of days before, but it hadn't been officially announced yet, so I wasn't sure if it had been legitimized or not, but Cassius Ohno was also released. Deonna Purrazzo was really an underrated talent, underused in NXT. Alexander Jaksic, I'll be honest, I never saw him work in WWE. Cassius Ohno was not the same Chris Hero that he was on the indies, which was his problem the first time around when he got released from WWE. So, you know, it is what it is. It's sad for them, and I hate to see him go, but, you know, off they went.
Agreed.
Not on this list, but they were released a couple of days before the Revival. It's been announced they are in AEW. They're going to be known as The Revolt. So the FTR hashtag that Being the Elite started, that, you know, the Revival kind of ran with, is now Fear the Revolt instead of, you know, F the Revival. So, you know, I think they'll do fine there. They were great in WWE. They're that old school heel brawler sort of tag team, and I think they'll do fine in AEW.
I agree.
And now the big one. This one came as a shock to me, and I think probably you too, but I think it's probably the best thing that could happen to Rusev is getting released from WWE.
Well, I agree. And you know how I felt about his last storyline. I thought
it was garbage.
And I think all storylines like that are shit. And to be honest with you, there was really never an end to it.
Right.
And, you know, that was a guy that should have been pushed to the moon. He had a couple of U.S. title runs. But I guess, you know, he's a guy that hopefully one day we don't have to have on our list, because hopefully he goes somewhere and he wins multiple championships. But he's a guy arguably that if we do this in 10 years, they could be on our list. Like, why didn't this guy ever win a championship?
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah. And Rusev is damn good. Mm-hmm. And he's just, I think he's another guy that they got kind of lost in the fold, and he got hurt there when he was getting his push, and it just, I don't know. And then of course you got Lana in there, and Vince got a hard on and had to put her in the forefront of everything. Yep. And just totally ruined the whole God dang thing for me, man. And Rusev deserved better. And I, to be honest with you, I'm glad he's gone. And it's not against him. It's against the WWE. And I wouldn't be surprised if AEW offers him the moon when he goes there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's champion there by 2021 at the right. latest.
I think he comes in and he could do a lot of good work with a lot of those guys in AEW. You know, he's a more talented Mark Miro. He was destroyed either intentionally or unintentionally by baggage, basically, which, I mean, I hate to call Lana baggage, but that's exactly what she was. You know, I think if he is a single guy, or Lana is not, you know, Rina Mero, he'd be fine. But she started to get more and more attention and started to get over organically. And if a guy does that, Vince hates it. And he will do everything he can to bury you. But a woman who can get over organically without being an in-ring talent, he will just completely rewrite the universe for them. And I don't understand it. Like, Mark Miro was super talented. He wasn't on Rusev's level by any stretch of the imagination, but he was never going to get anywhere with Rina Miro by his side. That's why, you know, I mean, she's older now, but that's why Brock never brings her around. You know what I mean? To put her on the forefront. She wouldn't be the same, you know, Sable that she is now. But, you know, and I think that was Rusev's biggest curse, was the fact that he had a hot wife.
No, I agree. And I just even back when he was, like I said, there's just something. Yeah, it's got to be her, because Vince just never lets guys like that with the valets and the hot wives. Just he only. And to be honest with you, I think Mero, without Sable, I think he had talent enough that he could have gotten a small run with the world championship. And I think that Rusev should have.
I agree. I completely agree. And I hate for this to become like a Lana bashing session, because I don't think she's a terrible person. And I don't think that, you know, there was any malice behind that. But, you know, it really, everything started to go downhill for Rusev when they were getting ready to do almost a similar story to what they were doing before he got released with Dolph Ziggler. God, probably it's been about 5 years now. And they had Lana and Dolph Ziggler as a group or as a pairing. And then all of the photos came out on Instagram. Rusev and Lana are married. From that point forward, you can do nothing with those two storyline related. Because, right. You know, Jim Cornette said it once, you know, just because kayfabe's dead doesn't mean you need to piss on its grave. And when word got out that those two were married, everything stops, right? You almost have to, because fans aren't stupid anymore. And, you know, when you try to push this whole, like, oh, look at Dolph Ziggler making out with Lana. It's like, dude, 4 days ago, she was in the Bahamas with Rusev getting married. I'm not, come on. Right. Don't insult me. And so when they tried to pull this whole, I want a divorce, you know, Bobby's my husband, blah, 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 blah. But yet there's Rusev in the front lawn and Lana's taking his picture while he mows the lawn. I mean, fucking come on.
No, I agree. And that was, to be honest with you, I think Bobby deserved better than that. That was just a trash story and bullshit. And with you got two guys like that have the look, that are talented wrestlers that could tell the story. They don't need that bullshit.
They don't. They really, really don't. And like you said, they could tell the story. I mean, Bobby is good enough to where he can make that work. Rusev is good enough to make it work. And, you know, it sucks because I feel like Bobby had the juice with Vince to shoot that down. But he has such a hard-on to get in the ring with Brock Lesnar that he will do anything to make that happen. And this was one of those situations where it was a stupid gimmick. I can almost guarantee everybody involved knew it was a stupid angle. And the only reason it was being done was for backstage politics.
Agreed.
All right, so that's the releases. There were a bunch of other producers that were furloughed. We won't get into that because hopefully Vince will bring them back. And so we won't touch on that. I was a little sad to see Fit Finlay go because I love Fit. But anyway, real quick, before we wrap it up, I want to touch on the Money in the Bank pay-per-view coming up. May 10th. So we got, about 20 days or so. Five matches have been announced. You've got the Universal Championship, Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt, Drew McIntyre and Seth for the WWE title, Bayley and Tamina Snuka for the Women's Championship on the SmackDown side, and then the Money in the Bank matches are coming along. Daniel Bryan, Aleister Black, Apollo Crews, Rey Mysterio, and then the winner of Drew Gulak and King Corbin, and then one other guy. And then you have on the women's side, Asuka, Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax, Dana Brooke, and then the winner of Lacey Evans and Sasha Banks, and then one other woman to be announced at I believe, SmackDown. So the unique thing this year is WWE is leaving their current Titan Towers headquarters, which has been a staple for 30 years of the WWE, and they're moving to a new building. So what WWE does when they get a new toy is they completely explode the old toy. So this year, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view will be held at Titan Towers in the WWE corporate headquarters. You're going to start on the first floor and you make your way up to a ring on the roof. The suitcase is suspended above this ring that's on the roof and off you go. I think given the current climate, I think it can be done well. I hope it's done well. But it also has the potential, because it's, an eight-story building, I think. It also has the potential to be really, really stupid.
Yeah, I agree. That's all. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. It's going to be interesting to see. To see how it goes. I'm not going to jump the gun here and say that it's going to be really bad, but it's going to be one of those where if they don't do everything perfect, and even production-wise, mm-hmm. if they don't produce it perfect, it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, so. Spot on. It's basically supermarket sweep if you could throw punches if they don't do it right. It's an interesting idea. And it's an interesting twist on a gimmick match that, quite frankly, isn't really all that stale, but it probably could use some freshening up. And you need to do something, because I think they learned from the ladder match at WrestleMania with the SmackDown Tag Team titles, an empty arena ladder match is not nearly as exciting as when there's a crowd there.
No, I agree. Yeah. So, but they're kind of in like for lack of a better term, save me mode, because you're right. They got to come up with some creative stuff to try to save face while all this is going on. So
yeah, and I mean, you know, you an empty arena ladder match, I probably wouldn't be as invested in unless it had some sort of unique twist to it, like this does. I'll watch just for the sheer intrigue of it.
Oh, well, again, I'll watch to see how it goes, like I did with WrestleMania, and hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised again.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I'm hoping for, too. And I hope that there's a couple more of those well-produced matches, or even, you know, an elongated promo like the Firefly Funhouse match, which really wasn't, it was more of a promo than it was a match, but whatever. Something like, I would love to see something really well produced going forward, but we'll see. So yeah, that's May 10th. July 25th is our debut show, Pro Wrestling Havoc Emergence. The card has made some minor tweaks to it. We wrapped up, what was it, last week, we were able to secure the services of Electric Eli. So he'll be on the card for us this year, or this this go around. We were a little bummed out when we couldn't book him the first time around. So now that we were able to book him, we definitely wanted to make sure we got him on the card. So he is there on the card. He will be there July 25th, ready to rock and roll for us. I know you're big on Eli. I love his work. You know, I'm super excited for this card, and, you know, tickets are on sale at eventbrite.com. You can go to our website at pwhavoc.com and you can buy them there as well. Go to the store page. We're working on putting, access to talent, store pages during the pandemic, cause they can't sell merch at shows. So we want to put their merch on our store, whether they've worked with us or not. So, you know, we put out the call, so we're slowly getting those in, and we'll keep putting them on the website and on the social media. So stay tuned for that.
Not to toot our own horn, but to toot our own horn. I'm telling everybody out there right now, this is not a show that you're going to want to miss.
No.
This is going to be, personally to me, I think this is going to be one of the best shows around in 2020. And it just keeps getting better and better. Yeah. So,
and we've got a lot of good stuff lined up storyline wise. So you're going to want to be there from the ground up.
The tag match is going to be something, I think. Malice and Gary is going to be a good match. Well, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, how Wellington's going to react to not having an opponent right now, and where things are going to go from there. Mm-hmm. So
the one match that I think might steal the show outside of the tag team match, which we've had to make a couple of minor changes to, we're going to have the return of Mike the Flight White. He'll be back. In Jackson doing his thing, and he'll be teaming up with Frank, right? Yeah, Frank.
Yep.
And they'll be going up against the Spirit of Detroit, Jonte and Cassidy Keith, and the Destroyers from Ferndale, Cobra TA and Freedom Ramsey. That one will be a great one. And then our other triple threat match, which I think has become a number one contenders match for the Grand River Championship, and that is JP Ono, Electric Eli, and why can I not think of his name? I was just looking at the damn thing because we had to replace Movado. Lennox Norris. I love Lennox. And it's weird because I was just playing Total Extreme Wrestling 2013, and I have that roster, the 2019 roster that I got from a guy in Denmark. And so I was like, oh, there's going to be nobody that I recognize other than, you know, the big names. Lennox Norris is in there. Dre Jacobs is in there. You know, so I was Briar's in that roster list. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. So this is definitely, these are names that are known literally worldwide, you know, so you're going to want to check them out. Guys that have been on WWF television before, WWE television, I should say, Impact, you know, so there's a lot of good names out there that you're going to want to come down and check out.
Well, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of guys, you know, like you said, there's a lot of history, a lot of talent, a lot of guys that have been in the game for a long time. I mean, and if you look up some of the history on these guys, like, you know, Briar, his resume speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. You know, Malice's resume speaks for himself, you know. And of course he teams up with Phil Monahan and Legion, and they're one of the best tag teams around. Yep. So,
yep.
You know, it's going to be a great show. So,
definitely don't want to miss it. So that's going to do it for our show. As always, you can check us out on anchor.fm. Big thanks to them. Big thank you to Red Raptor Comics. Make sure you check them out as well. Go to their website, go to their Facebook page. They're doing auctions all the time. They're doing all kinds of good stuff. So make sure you check them out and give them your support. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next time where we'll continue to talk about Money in the Bank and some other wrestling news that may come up between now and next week sometime. So thanks for listening.